Are you ready? Supercross is coming to Melbourne. Don't miss the Monster Energy OzX Open inside Marvel Stadium on November 30. See two-time world champion Chad Reed take on 2018 world champion Jason Anderson from the USA, Australia's best, and the greatest of all time, Ricky Carmichael. More racing, more action, more entertainment for all ages. Don't miss out. Book at Ticketmaster now.
Scotty McLaughlin.
Big Jack has driven the goal. What a cracker.
And McLaughlin comes to the line.
Yes!
A 2:03.8.
And Scott McLaughlin puts one on the chair.
Jack puts it through. He's a man for the big occasion.
That is off the scale fast.
Who would have thought back in May, just 5 months ago, we combined for our first podcast. Back then, one of our duo was an injury-prone forward stuck on the sidelines. Now Jack Riewoldt is a two-time premiership star with the Tigers. The other bloke was just starting out on his way to complete and utter supercar dominance. He's won absolutely everything in his sport this year, so it was fitting on Sunday he won this on the mountain.
What a year for Team Penske! Penske's here to add something very big, another milestone. 26-year-old Kiwi Scott McLaughlin wins the Super Cheap Auto Bathurst 1000 of 2019.
He's in tears. He's in tears.
Jack Riewoldt, fresh from a weekend at Mount Panorama. Hello.
Hello, Tim. How are we?
And Scott McLaughlin, fresh from the greatest moment of his life, on behalf of everyone here at Balls and Bumpers. Congratulations, my friend.
Thanks, boys. That was, even just hearing that back is pretty cool, because I actually haven't seen, no, I've seen it, don't get me wrong, but I'm going to watch the race this Saturday with my team, so it's going to be the first time we've seen it fully, so I'm really excited for that. But it's so weird, isn't it? Bathurst. No, Jesus
it is,
Christ.
Mate. Congratulations. And of course, myself and Hodgie had the front row seats to it. Mate, what amazing feeling, isn't it?
Oh, it's a relief. It's just I can't explain, you know, the feeling of going across the line. Like you dream about what you're gonna do and what I don't know, just like what you're gonna perform like when you go across the line. But it's completely, it just falls on you. It's just relief. It's just like, if I was standing up, I would have fallen over. You know, it's just stuff like that.
And I'm sure, mate, the phone's probably gone into meltdown with well wishes. Who's been the number one, the most famous? Who's it been?
Oh, I've got a story for you guys.
All right.
I had ScoMo. Prime Minister Scott Morrison gave me a call.
The Night Watchman,
I'm not
called
kidding
you.
That's awesome.
Yes, he called me. It was crazy. I didn't think it was going to happen. So we had the Supercars media guy.
Was this Monday?
Yeah, legit.
And
legit.
You were fairly hungover at the time?
Oh, I was torched. Absolutely torched.
Tim,
just on the Today
I think
Show.
To be hungover, you've actually got to have had some sleep.
So,
oh, mate.
Do you even know who Scott Morrison is when he says, hello, it's Scott Morrison?
No, I knew who he is. Like, absolutely. I know he's the Prime Minister of Australia, where I live. And, geez, it was when he... So, I had a call from Supercars head off saying, hey, the Prime Minister wants your number. I'm like, oh, yeah, whatever. That's you're full of shit. And then... I basically, when I answered the phone, it was a blocked number. I actually thought it was a radio call, and I was just like, hello, Scott speaking. Like, I was pretty abrupt, because I hate blocked numbers. And then it's like, hello, Scott, this is Prime Minister Scott Morrison here. How are you? Congratulations.
So is that how he introduced himself? Prime Minister,
yes,
Scott Morrison.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison. And I'm like,
I reckon he was worried you didn't have any idea who he'd be.
And I'm like, I straightened up. You should have seen me in the car. Carly's got videos of it. It's crazy. It was... But I did proceed to tell him the All Blacks going to win the World Cup, and this is probably because I was half dusty and still half lit from the night before, so it was sort of I had a bit of balls about me, that's for sure. But that's my most famous. That's my most famous by a mile.
I thought you would have gone someone better than that. The Prime Minister is pretty cool, but any other motorsport superstars?
No.
How many messages were there when you woke up Monday morning?
No, I had I had over 150 text messages that I had to get through. I had my teammates from, Ryan Blaney, he texted me. I'm just scrolling through my phone here.
Then he went and won the NASCAR race at Talladega that next day.
Yeah, he did too. Yeah. Will Power, obviously, he's a Kiwi. He's one of my teammates as well. My old boss, Christian Dahl, he's actually used to be the boss of Polestar Volvo, which was pretty cool. Lounsey texts me. That's pretty normal. Ricky Bobby, which is you. Yeah, you text me, Jack. John Stephenson.
Oh,
you know,
really?
The guy, the Commonwealth Games runner.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. I played golf with him, kind of why he texted me.
The Bont or Bob or anyone?
Yeah. Any Western World players?
I had Bob Murphy message me on Instagram. Nathan Lyon messaged me. Gary. Yep.
Team Revolt.
I'm just Link McCarthy from the Brisbane Lions. Obviously, Lockie Neal, one of the friend of the podcast.
Yeah, okay, that's enough. We get it, mate. A few people text you.
You guys want me to keep going? I've got a few numbers here. Mark Barretta.
All right, enough about you.
Have you taken a moment just to marvel at the success you've had?
Hayden Patton.
You've been friends for, about 2 years now, and then you started this podcast back in May, and then for you to go through what you did 2 and a bit weeks ago, and now, Scott, for you to go through what you went through on the weekend, and you know there's a back-to-back championship waiting for you in a few weeks' time. This is a remarkable run of success that the two of you have had as new best mates.
Yeah, I think we just had a blast, really. We both enjoyed the time. We both like playing, obviously, our sports, and both like watching the other person's sports. So obviously, Scott was down here for the granny, and I went up to Bathurst and just to enjoy it together and celebrate together has been, a bunch of fun. And the other thing from that is that we've been able to celebrate with each other's families as well. So I think that's been pretty special too. So what are you actually going to bring to the table, Tim?
Oh,
well, we got Bathurst champion and two-time premiership player.
Well, I brought you two together, and
you created this.
There's an award-winning book there. There's an AFMA trophy for AFMA.
Award-winning book.
He always rolls back.
What awards is that book won?
It's a best-selling book, not an award-winning book.
All he did was choose a couple of pictures and put a few captions next to it, mate.
He won a bronze star in the Kids Week.
Let's get the official duties. We're here thanks to the Monster Energy OzX Open. It's the greatest supercross event ever to be held outside of the USA, featuring icons of the sport Ricky Carmichael and Aussie Chad Reed. It's at Marvel Stadium in Melbourne. It's Saturday, November 30. We're all looking forward to it, if nothing else, just to watch you two knuckleheads on Peewee 50s in the celebrity race. How is the progress going, Jack? I think you spent a bit of time on a bike up at Bathurst.
Yeah, I couldn't turn... the keys weren't there, so I actually couldn't turn the bike on, but I sat on the bike. It's too big
for it. It's so funny.
It doesn't fit.
It doesn't fit.
I'm enlisting a friend of the podcast to maybe give me a few... few sneaky lessons so that I don't disgrace myself on November 30th.
No, you can't do that. No lessons, because I'm doing the same.
Yeah, but you've ridden a motorbike before, right?
Yeah, I think you've got more of an idea, Scott.
Oh, who knows?
Hey,
jury's out.
The savage aftermath, the monumental controversy out of Bathurst weekend.
Yep.
It unfortunately happened Monday afternoon. Scott, you're on your way to dinner after a full day of media, hungover. And your sister Sammy went A over T on a gutter?
Yep.
I was hoping she'd done it at the Ox.
Yep. I thought you were learning something else then, but that's unbelievable. Yeah, it was. She was walking down the street, King Street in Sydney, and with just some god awful shoes on, and she's just gone ass over head and broken her ankle in two spots. Yep. So just fair chance she needs surgery.
Well, the McLaughlin family have copped a hit, and the Revolt family have copped one too. The official brother of the podcast.
Oh no!
He's got a chest infection. He's copped the chest infection.
Can't keep up with the big boys.
Seriously? So he brought nothing to the table, and then he's proceeded to have a chest infection. I put that in quotations.
I'm taking this opportunity to actually remove his title as the official brother of the podcast, and I will be installing my other brother, Harry, as the now official brother of the podcast. So,
yep. We could say that Charlie's the official flop of the podcast, maybe.
Yeah, we're disowning Charlie, and Harry's been welcomed on board.
Before we get into the fun...
Actually, I wanted to... No, hang on. What did you get Harry for his birthday, Jack? So my brother Harry didn't.
I've got two brothers. My youngest brother Charlie, who has added a lot to the podcast. My brother Harry didn't come to Bathurst because, and he's a real motorsport fan, because it was his birthday on Bathurst, so he'd organised something and he couldn't come up. So me being the great brother I did, I got him a present.
What was it, mate?
I got a sponsored pack from L'Oreal in the mail.
Oh,
that was yellow and black themed, and it was given to me. And I hadn't bought him a present because I'd been away all weekend, so I took my tag off it and then re-gifted it to him.
Oh, that's terrible. That is terrible.
Yeah, you're right. That's shit. That is shit.
Oh, you're the official shit brother of the podcast.
All right, that's good. That's enough jokes until later on, because I've got some cracking stories from Bathurst.
Before we get into the cracking stories, the fun of the Oxford Hotel Sunday night after you won the Bathurst 1000. Can we just get into the elephant in the room, address it? It came with your teammate Fabian Coulthard in car 12 from DJR Team Penske, Scott. There has been an enormous controversy, a really damaging controversy since Sunday night. What do you make of what's played out with Fabian, with car 12, with that safety car period that has left a bit of a cloud over the results?
Yeah, it's been hard for everyone at the team, you know, especially car 17 and what we put towards there. But honestly, I knew nothing about it and still don't know much at all, basically, to that press conference. You know, when Shane started speaking about it in the press conference, that's sort of when I twigged that there was something weird going on. But yeah, so I know about as much as everyone else. I know that car 12 was sort of preparing to double stack there, and I think that's all they were trying to avoid. So,
Do you honestly think that it had any result in the race, in the final results there?
Oh, I don't. No way. I think we had a great car all weekend. Like, you know, Alex drove fantastic. You know, I felt like we broke the lap record, obviously, a number of times. You know, the shootout was amazing. We started from pole, did the best job fuel saving. I felt like on our strategy, I was doing the best I could. I was hitting the numbers that I needed to. And at the end, we had a one-on-one battle with Shane, and it could have gone either way, absolutely. And the safety cars fell our way in that regard to help win us, you know, help that win. You know, there was so much racing left to go, and I feel like we won it fair and square. We put ourselves in a position to win that race. It just sucks that sort of we're having to deal with all this stuff when it, you know, it should be the greatest sort of week of all our lives, you know.
And the, I suppose, the person that's really bore the brunt of it from a media perspective and social media perspective has been Car 12 and Fabian. How's he travelling?
Yeah, he's obviously struggling. You know, it's been hard for him, hard for the team, hard for Alex, myself, my family. But yes, obviously Fabian's copped the brunt. But one thing has been absolutely horrendous is the social media stuff, to me, but also to especially to Fabian, what I've seen. And just so-called sort of fans sending death threats to any driver, but especially to Fabian's been crazy. I know there's been death threats to Ryan. Like people sending that kind of stuff to, you know, real people with families and that. You know, I've said it on another pod. I've said it on another, you know, with media. It's just completely unacceptable. And like, you know, people have real lives and have to deal with this with families. And it's just, I can't get my head around it.
What about the response from other teams? It's been really interesting, and I think it's been just as damning and damaging. I know there is another podcast out there where a team boss commented about your team cheating. He likened it to the result on Sunday to match fixing, what your team did.
Well, you know, he said that it was
what Steve Smith did. Yeah.
As they, you know, he did, but said it was the same as to tampering with the ball in cricket.
What's your response to that, Scott? I mean it's pretty damaging, those comments.
It's highly illegal.
And I'm sure your legal team would be having a look at those comments. These are from Barry Ryan from the Erebus team. What's your response to that? Are you disappointed in the response from other teams up and down pit lane?
Well, I think we know one team's been completely vocal about the whole thing. Absolutely. A couple of drivers, obviously. But I think that's ridiculous. We didn't do anything of that sort. At the end of the day, the safety car period was nearly 30 laps from the finish. You've got to look at what happened after that as well. Two more safety cars. Bathurst is obviously unpredictable, and there always coulda, shoulda, woulda stories. I think some people would be better off focusing on their own internal team issues than kicking off about us. But the what they have said in the media and stuff is absolutely, like he says, completely damning and highly illegal. And it's really disappointing, but and surprising, like I said. It's shocked a lot of us when he came out with that, for sure.
The thing that disappoints me, Scott, and you can't say much here, I'll probably bring Jack into it, but it's 4 days on. So we're recording this podcast Thursday night, so 4 nights on from the checkered flag waving. It just seems like in AFL land for you, Jack, the match, if there's a controversial moment, the match review panel sits Monday morning, and by Monday afternoon, this is sorted.
Even earlier than that for Saturday games, you know, by Sunday.
Yeah, and then this sport, they had such a good day on Sunday, you know, an epic race, one of the great motor races.
TV ratings through the roof.
World. The TV ratings were astronomical. The attendance at Mount Panorama was through the roof. The winner is, and we're biased clearly, but an unbelievably popular winner for Dick Johnson, for Roger Penske, for Scott McLaughlin to win the thing. Huge ticks all around for the sport. But ever since then, it's just been a shambles for mine. The fact that they couldn't declare...
So what's the actual hold-up? Because we had the issue at Pukekohe, and some drivers have come out and said that that Supercars is admitted fault or said... sort of sorry for what had happened.
So this is a stewards thing. So they just said after the race there'll be a full investigation, but we don't meet again until the Gold Coast 600, which is next weekend. So I know Robert Craddock said it really well the other night on the back page on Fox Sports, that this is like a protest in the Melbourne Cup, and instead of it being held 9 minutes later, which is what happens in horse racing, they've said, well, we'll hold it 9 days later. And I just think it's damaging for the sport, and there's so much officialdom in sport that is an issue right now, you know, from what the refs did in the NRL Grand Final. Everyone's blowing about the VAR in soccer. You know, the score review is a bit of an embarrassment.
NFL
in the
at
AFL.
The moment's copping it too.
But honestly, the stewards in supercars are having a dreadful season, and I can't believe this is still going on. 4 nights later, we still don't know official results.
Well, I don't understand what the hold-up is. Are they waiting to get... Well, they're waiting to get everyone's testimony, or are they just keeping it in the news so it's relevant?
Is there a chance, Scott, that this will be held earlier than the Gold Coast 600 when you guys are next racing next weekend at Surfers Paradise?
I don't know for sure. I think that's something that you'd have to speak to Ryan about, to be honest, Hodgie. But yeah, it's
has
the whole
done.
Stewards thing, how it goes around, how it's been how I can't comment. That's up to them,
yep,
how they want to do it, you know.
I will say this, and Jack, you can agree, it's not your sport, but the stewards are having an absolute mare in supercars this year, and I hope they make changes at the end of this year. And I hope going forward, if there are these ongoing issues from a race meeting, sort it out at the bloody race meeting. So whether that's Sunday night, and I know Sunday is a long day at Mount Panorama, but they've got to come back Monday morning and have it resolved by lunchtime.
You're throwing your hat in the ring, are you?
But you also got to remember, though, against that, Hodgie, there's some guys in the sport that are volunteers. So their main job isn't a steward or whatever. So there
Scott, there will be
sitting on the panel.
This is a professional sport. It churns over tens of millions of dollars.
I understand.
The ratings, any sport in the country, there were AFL prelim final figures for 9 hours. It was the highest rating channel in Fox Sports history on Sunday. So it's a professional sport. They've looked anything but professional. They've looked unprofessional since that moment. So I hate the fact that it's taken the gloss off what was the greatest moment in your career on Sunday. So I'm not really sure where the segue is from that. But
I'll tell you one thing, though. Being on that podium, standing on the roof of the car, like seeing the team hanging off the fence.
Me and with the punters.
Yeah, that was probably one of the highest moments, was when I just all of a sudden spotted Jack dead set in the middle of the fan groups, just calling out my name. I don't know how I saw him, but anyway, it was literally everything I'd ever dreamed of. And then having Dick and Roger on the podium with us, with the crowd chanting like my name, and something that I'll never forget. And it's just so glad I got to live that. And it's I'm very confident that, you know, I'm always going to be, you know, at least a Bathurst winner.
Hey, so one thing, a little segue off that, you were just saying where people were chanting your name. I didn't make it into the official sort of area.
I couldn't believe that. Charlie, you must have been so slow.
Charlie, the unofficial brother of the podcast, made it in somehow because he had a red polo on.
People will see him. He's behind Carly.
He didn't have the black slacks on. I just still had a white t-shirt on, and I bolted for it. They were like, no. And I was like, nah, this is a part of Bathurst. I'm sprinting down there. But my father, Chris, one of the official dads. One of the official dads of the podcast. He didn't make his way down there too quick, but he was saying, and you're saying, we were chanting out Scott. There was a group of about, he reckons, 10 or so sort of older fellas that were clearly from a different era, chanting out, we want Dick.
Yeah.
He sort of turned around and he's like, yeah, right, yeah, what's going on here?
Yeah. Didn't sound too good, boys. Yeah.
Obviously, we want Dick Johnson. So
he come out, yeah, good on.
They do talk about your life changes when you win the Bathurst 1000. It's up there with the Melbourne Cup, with an AFL or NRL Grand Final. If you win on
you
the biggest stage,
got one more to go, mate.
Your life changes. Have you sensed that, or have you felt that since Sunday at about 6:30 p.m.?
My life has changed because I don't dream of being a Bathurst winner. I am a Bathurst winner now, and that's one thing that's so relieving. So I can't even put a word on it. It's just undescribable the feeling that I've got now and how excited I am to go back to Bathurst. But I think walking through the street, even coming home, I was wheeling the Brock Trophy in a big silver box, coming back home into my apartment building, and there was about 3 or 4 people that asked for photos. And like, well, I didn't know who they were, obviously, but it was just, I'd never had that before. I know it's obviously pretty early since you know, it's all happened, but it doesn't really happen too often, which is pretty funny.
Chase had a photo with the Peter Brock Trophy?
Yeah, Chase did. Chase says hello too, Jack. I actually told Chase before I went down I was going to be a Bathurst 1000 winner. I'll come back a Bathurst 1000 winner. And Chase said, well, good luck, mate. I hope you do well.
Who runs the Instagram? Who is it?
That is
you or Carly?
That is Scott.
That's Carly. I provide some content. Carly provides captions and posts it. She manages it.
So we've got the race. We've got the weekend to work our way through over the next little bit on Balls and Bumpers. But can we start with the Sunday night? After the stress and chaos of the week, the fun of what follows winning the biggest race in your sport, what do you remember most fondly, Scotty, from the moment you crossed the finish line, getting on the podium, and then everything that happened till about 3:30 Monday morning?
Yeah, it was a whirlwind. I guess first off, getting out of off the podium, there's a bunch of people that wanted photos with the trophy, and I was walking to the press conference and stuff. First thing I asked, and there was a group of fans that were like really keen to get a photo. I'm like, guys, do you have a beer at all? And they're like, oh, we do, back at our site. This bloke dead ass ran. Like, it must have been a huge time away, like down the road. He's gone and got me a 4X gold can, and I've slotted one with the fans outside the press conference room. It's bloody awesome.
That's elite.
That was probably one of the coolest memories at the track. But then, obviously, getting back after the press conference and seeing all the guys and the elation and everyone is just excited. I walked into my bus and there was just like all these people, and it was just, the look of the bus from Tiffin Motorhomes Australia wasn't looking too good. I'll tell you what, it was half upside down, but the cheers and it was just unbelievable. It really was. It was crazy. I felt invincible.
I made my way into that bus actually for a little bit because I
got a photo with Ludo. I see.
Oh yeah, I did get a photo with Ludo, and that's where I'm going to lead into this story. Fair dinkum. Like, I went into the bus and there was no beers. For some reason, they didn't bring beers straight into the pits, where I was assuming there would be a few beers, but no beers came in. So I went searching and went into the Taj Mahal, the Tiffin Motorhome, and I spotted Ludo. Ludo gave me a can of something. Now, it wasn't marked.
Silver can?
It was a silver can.
Yeah, ginger beer.
It was hideous.
What? That
it's
was the
6% ginger beer. It's a home brew.
That was the worst thing I have ever drunk in my life. I still finished it. But what is that crazy Frenchman on about? Because seriously, that was tripe.
Well, I'm also surprised how you had a conversation with him. How did you actually have a conversation with Ludo, Jack? Was that
I'd had about 20 beers at that stage, so it was quite easy to understand the French accent. So No, it was. He's a massive Richmond fan, actually. I didn't realise that.
No, he's a fanboy. He's a fanboy of sport. He really. I think he was a massive fanboy of you. Being there at the track, he's like my boy Jack, and with my
he actually
with
my, called me my boy Jack.
Yeah, and he calls. It's nice that you're friends with my puppy Scotty. You know, that's what he calls me. He basically calls me a dog, mate. Like it's weird.
Oh well, you do that with Chase, seriously.
What about the significance of both? So for Jack being there for you on Sunday, and having Jack there for you, what did it mean during? Not so much the race weekend, but afterwards, like. You two were getting on like a house on fire with the round of shots you were consuming. It's pretty cool with what's going on.
Yeah, it's just like a release, I guess, for me. Like when Jack, Charlie and Cabbage were in the bus, or any of my friends for that matter, you know, my family as well. It's just nice having those people there. And it's been also nice, even post the win, like this week and stuff, no matter what people have been saying about me on social media and all that sort of stuff, the main people that love me, that support me, that are friends with me or whatever and cheer me on, they're the ones I've got to worry about and who are so proud of me and what's been going on. I guess that's the significance of having anyone that's close to you there. But I guess with Jack having won the grand final, I really wanted to come out there and win it for him. And when I stood up on that podium, I saw him down there and I saw Charlie at the end and all that sort of stuff. It was like, oh my God, like, it was like a big click. It was like, yep, I've done it, you know, and that's what's incredible.
It's the one thing that I, when you go into something like this, Hodgie, and footy's a little bit different because it's over so quickly, but the whole, well, I suppose it's just that elongated weekend of the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's a lot of downtime, but the one thing and Scotty sent us his schedule so we could figure out when to catch up with him is, it's not just the race that people see, that's where the drivers are putting their energy. There's signing days, there's corporate events. I could not believe how much drivers have to do. And we were really conscious of actually not trying to be in Scotty's face too much because I could sort of go, shit, he's got so much stuff on here. You've got to have some sort of downtime. It really is ridiculous. You're a walking billboard as much as a driver over that 4 days.
That's why I've got to wear the slacks, mate. You know, that's why I got to wear the Pumas and the jeans.
Roger saw me in just a white T-shirt, shorts, pretty cruisy.
Hey, you met Roger?
Yeah, had a chat to him.
I introduced him, Hodgie, like this. I'm like, Roger, this is Jack. He's a mate of mine. He won your equivalent of the Super Bowl in Australia. And then he's like, oh, he was all about it, wasn't he? He loved it.
No, he loved it. And we actually had a chat whilst you were out driving. Well, just me and Roger were standing there looking at the monitors together and crunching some numbers, and I was like, oh, what about this little corner here? Can we go a bit better? He goes, that's a great idea. I'll go and tell Ludo.
Yep.
But
walks around, doesn't he?
He just potters around. And what's his knowledge actually like? Is he legit? Like, could he control the team?
Roger?
Roger,
he does control the team.
Like,
yeah,
in terms of, no, but Ludo comes up with the tactics and whatnot.
Yeah, but
if Roger says something to him,
on.
Is that, yep, this goes.
Oh, yeah. Well, if Roger goes, hey, you know, like, for instance, Newcastle last year with Reynolds, you know, he's like, you let Reynolds go. You know, we've got a championship to win. It happens. We didn't want to do it. We wanted to win the race, yeah. But it happens. You know, he obviously, you don't really say no to Roger too often.
Did Roger say anything about Jack's dress sense? I helped get him into the corporate box on Sunday, not knowing what Jack was wearing. He turned up in sneakers, shorts, and a white T-shirt. I was like, mate, you could have wore a collar at least.
Mate, it was 30 degrees.
You could have wore a collar or got a little bit dressed up for the corporate hospitality.
I had a shell hat on, mate.
Yeah,
I'm pumped about that.
Hey, lads, so yeah. 2 shows ago, when we had the post-grand final show, Scott, you said being part of Jack's camp on the Saturday afternoon for the grand final day was one of your favourite sporting memories. For you, Jack, to spend the day on the weekend, you landed on Friday. What was the experience like, and where does it rate in all the things you've done in sport and sport you've attended to go up to Mount Panorama for the first time? You know, how lucky are you to have ridden shotgun to Scott and then watched him have his greatest moment?
Yeah, look, the result aside, going to Mount Panorama, we just drove in. So we hired a van from Sydney and drove a camper van up there. And we sort of were driving. We knew we were close. And then you could just see Mount Panorama written on the hill there, obviously. And it had an eerie feeling to it, but it's an amazing event. It is a race car event, but then there's just so many things that come with it. So if you ever think about doing it, get up there and have a crack at it.
Jeez, how's your first one, though?
Topped it off. But, I mean, I texted him after the race and just said how proud I was of him to win it. From where he's come from in 2017, with obviously everything that happened in Newcastle and losing the championship, the last 2 years have been... there has not been a blip in the radar, and if there's been a minor one, it's been a bounce back the next week or the next round, whatever it is. So it's I'm just really proud of him, and also the thing that you love is that, like, so we spent a bit of time with Scott's family in the back of the pits and had some interaction and just chatting to Wayne about it and Scott's dad about whatnot, and him and my dad got along well. Being able for them to be able to involve my family as well was really special, and I think Carly, Scott's partner, came down and sat with my family at the grand final. So it goes beyond just us two having communication and whatnot. It's bigger than that. So it was a really, really special moment, one thing I'll never forget.
Just looking back on the race week, Scott, you know, to be fastest on Thursday and set a new lap record, you then topped that lap record on Friday, and then you topped it on Saturday, and then you did what you did on Sunday. What a phenomenal weekend sweep. Like, what a purple patch you were in.
Yeah, I sent a text to all the guys, and I said, you know, do you guys realize we just swept Bathurst in some ways? You know, like, we were, like you said, fastest on Thursday, fastest on Friday with the lap record, and then we went out and put it on pole and provisional qualifying in the rain, in torrential rain, and then come out fastest on Saturday and the top 10 shootout and won the race. Like, those weekends, that you got to capitalize on those weekends when you have a fast car, and we certainly did. And I couldn't be any more proud of not only, you know, Alex, the guys that work hard, but myself as well. Jack talks about I've come a long way as a driver and stuff like that, but I'm telling you, in 2017, if that was me last lap with Shane up my clacker, there's a fair chance I would have thrown that away. So it's amazing who, you know, Emma Murray, I've got to put a lot down to. She has been incredible for me and turned me into, you know, the driver I am today, absolutely.
And Saturday night, mate, there's been a bit made of the fact that you swapped engines over, which I didn't realise until your dad told me on Sunday that you'd got a freshie in there just to really get it going. What's the process behind that? Does that happen very often, swapping engines, or is it something that needed to be done?
No, that actually needed to be done. We had a problem with our engine with a gasket or something, so it was leaking water and we lost some water pressure. So that engine now is currently getting stripped down at supercars and stuff like that because there was such a fuss, especially from our mate on a frustrated podcast, opposition podcast. He was certainly saying that we're running a crazy engine, which is complete bullshit. We just changed it purely because of a precaution, because a couple of years ago we had pole at the same point and we blew an engine the next day, so it was just a precaution.
Lessons learned from past experiences, Tim.
Exactly.
So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you're invincible. Did that pace put more pressure on coming to Sunday morning? And can we ask how your nerves were pre-race? Bathurst is the one thing that, the one box you had left to tick. You're starting from pole position, so much expectation on you. How do you sleep? Like, it's the same question we asked Jack before his grand final. How did you sleep?
Hope you slept well in the Tiffin motorhome, mate.
Oh, and the Taj, and the Taj Mahal.
But what are you feeling? I mean, are you nervous as all hell leading into your biggest moment of the year?
I think my biggest thought was controlling the uncontrollables, and I just wanted the race to be like 20 laps. Like Saturday night, I went, oh my God, we've got 6 hours of just general nerves all day. But surprisingly, I went to bed. I spoke to Emma the night before and had a bit of a chit chat and whatever, felt all right. But, you know, we went to bed like, me and Carly, I fell asleep, straight to sleep. I woke up probably about 5:45, which is pretty normal at Bathurst Day, and obviously I couldn't get back to sleep, I was too excited. But I was really calm. Me and Carly hung out in the bus, just me and her, just before, you know, the race, before I had to walk out and go on the grid, and, you know, I was just, I had the tunes cranking, there's some
really
serious, there's some serious stuff going on, I was dancing, all this sort of stuff, it was pretty bad, but it was the most calm I think I felt prior to a race before, at Bathurst, so, and that obviously, you know, was a good thing. I was nervous, but it was a calm, it was like an excited nervous, I guess.
Talk us through when you watched the race back on Saturday. You said you're going to hook up with the team and have a few beers and watch it. What bits would you like to fast forward to most focus in on? I don't know, took your interest that you want to watch back again? What moments across...
The bits you remember.
6.5 hours of racing, 1,000 Ks, 161 laps.
Moster and Waters crashing at the Chase. I was right in front of that, saw that.
Were you at the Chase at that time?
Yeah, I was at the Chase.
Yeah, wow. That was a balls up, wasn't it? I think I'd like to look back, obviously, the race start, because I need to study that myself because of I was very aggravated by what was going on. I didn't have any radio. My radio wasn't working. The motor was overheating. There's stuff going on everywhere. So I'd like to look back at that and see if I could do better. That first stint, obviously, but probably Alex's stint. I think I remember... But my stint, when I jumped back in the car after Alex had his moment with the tyre, I think we were 12 or 13 seconds behind Wincup and Moffat, and I had to make that gap up, and we made it up in eight seconds, which is unbelievable. So, yeah, the pace of the car was so good. Obviously, the last 40 laps, I'd love to just... I can't wait to push play. But Saturday, as a team, we're watching... the race together at a mate's house.
Go to away? Are we talking like...
Yeah, from the start, it's a 5 p.m. race start.
Wow.
5 p.m. race start. I can run you through some supplementary regulations if need be.
Have you got any? I assume this is not a dry event.
It's not. It's actually a drinking event, which will be kindly sponsored by Coors.
Oh, my gosh. You've got a sponsor for Mad Monday, Tim.
Yeah, I do. Well, there's, you know, it's been dressed up. There's a take a sip. Everyone gets a car, so everyone gets like a car number, so everyone's got to pick it out of the hat. It's a sweep. And then if you get, say, me, let's say, so if you see the 17 getting passed, you take a sip.
What about Tim Slade, whoever cops him? Does he have to do like five shotguns or something for the first lap?
He's and a cracking fella too, actually. I saw him in the Ox. He's a really nice guy.
And 0.8.1 if you retire, and 0.8.2 is your car is now the car in 13th position if you retire. You'll do the same thing as whoever has that car from that point forward.
Okay.
So it's very, yeah. So let's say you have to finish someone else's drink and get them a new one. You have 3 laps to complete this, or it's a funnel of their drink of choice. 3.1. 3.2. If your car hits someone else's car, causing them to be 4 wheels off the track, that's when you have to finish someone else's drink and get them a new one.
This sounds so if you've got it.
Yeah, I hope you have some stewards there to run the show.
I was going
to
say, how do you start?
You guys aren't true. No. This will be fine. It's going to be fine. We're going to start with the top 10 shootout at 4 p.m. into a race start at 5 p.m. And she'll probably finish around 11.
Can we just straighten up a little bit? So, Alex Premer,
there
was a lot of talk about whether he could keep up with the co-drivers. You got a bit snaky last week when we suggested that he might be the question mark.
Yeah, I couldn't believe my mates were saying that.
Tim said that, not me.
He got it a bit snarly.
I love the Frenchie.
He was bullied a bit by the Tickford boys in the end, where we thought it might have been the 888 guys. Then he made that blue at the Chase. How do you...
Against main drivers, might add.
How do you keep... I mean, you're watching it back in the pits, getting ready to jump back in that car. How do you, I don't know, not drop your bottom lip and get all antsy and think, it's slipping away from us?
It's impossible not to. You just got to accept that you're going to feel that way. I was certainly pretty nervous at that point, but I knew it wasn't long before I was jumping back in the pits, but in the car. But there was the flat spot after that. Chaz moment, it was really bad. Like, I'm so surprised he actually got back to the pits on the lap that we asked him to. It was like nearly about to pop. So everyone says you need a little bit of luck, but geez, we had some luck. We had some serious luck in that regard.
Just a few more on the race. So then you pit.
Then more on the after party.
You get here. Yeah, you get trapped behind Van. Or Van Giz pulls up and he's double stacked at the Red Bull pit. So you're actually trapped in and you lose the lead.
Yeah, did you see that? Jamie. Yeah, was that on TV? Was
he cleaned
it?
Up a tire on the way out too?
And then you touch your own team's tire, and I was like, oh, so this could be a pit lane penalty and a complete double whammy. What do you like in the car when, you know, you have a long and checkered history with the number 97, Shane Van Gisbergen, and he parks directly in front of you, blocking your way out from your pit. Then his teammate, Jamie Whincup, actually leapfrogs you as a result. I mean, does that take... Can you go back to that moment and think, well, it took me two laps until I calmed down, or are you calm straight away?
No. I was calm straight away. I was like, what the hell? I threw my hands up in the air, but I understand that Shane's just doing an order. I'm sure he would have been just told to pull him behind Jamie. They must have thought that, you know, Jamie was finishing a lot sooner, or it was just a tactic. I think it did kind of hurt me a little bit, but I don't think it would have stopped me from going in front of Jamie. But yeah, that's where Emma comes into it. I was pretty much calm straight away. I come out of the pits and I'm like, all right, well, we lost track position there. Let's just get it going. But the whole reason in that stint before that safety car, before we came into the pit lane, I actually had to pull a gap of like three seconds, and we got to like 2.9 and the safety car came out. So we literally, like, that was to get in front of Jamie on fuel mileage. They had a bit of fuel on us. So if the safety car came out two laps later or even a lap later, I think we would have just made out in front of him. So maybe Shane could have been a factor at that point.
Speaking of fuel, mate, the conservation game of obviously trying to save fuel, there was a bit of, and I've watched a little bit back from, and had some, people live texting me asking about what's the fuel? Did you have enough fuel to get home, or did you have to save ridiculously, and did the safety car save you?
Oh, safety car definitely helped. I think we would have made it. It's just how fast we could have driven. I think we had a chance to make it, but I don't think I would have been able to hold the pace, especially in the lead. It's very hard saving fuel in the lead, but in a draft you can save a lot, and Shane behind me at that point was saving a ton. When we had a lead and Whincup was going for it, Whincup was gone and he was trying to just push and pit and then try and come out in front of us, but Shane was about 5 seconds behind. I could save to my number because I wasn't getting pushed, but when you have someone right up your clacker, it's hard to save the fuel you need because you're trying to stay in front of them as well. So we were going to make it. It's just how hard we could push.
So on the coverage, I was saying, usually, if you're going flat chat, you'd spend 5 litres of fuel around the 1 kilometre track. What sort of number have you got to get to? How much fuel are you trying to save per lap then when you're really going?
I can't really tell you that.
You can't really tell us.
I can't broadcast that to the world because then everyone knows our fuel number.
What would you save, Tim? What do they say?
I've no idea.
600 grams or something?
How difficult is it? I mean, you spend the whole week driving the wheels off the thing, and then they say, right, drive slowly, drive to this number, and it must feel like you're just dawdling around the joint when you're trying to race the wheels off it still to win the Peter Brock Trophy.
Yeah, but so the way you save fuel, you actually almost drive the car harder because you release the throttle probably 200 metres before the corner, but then you brake 100 metres to 150 metres past your actual brake marker. So you make up the time that you lose going off the brakes to gain the time going back in. So you save all that fuel being off throttle, but you gain it back up right before the apex, and effectively you're meant to lose nothing. You obviously do lose some time, but it's a tough thing to get used to, and geez, it's taken me a couple of years to get used to that. And we haven't had many fuel races, and that was a fuel race basically, from 110. So it's a tough gig to do.
Have you run out of fuel in the Jeep before, Jack?
Once, yep. Glen Huntly and Kooyong Road, yep.
Just a
quiet road?
it was bad. I'll tell you who, one of my teammates ran out of fuel. Dustin Martin, and he's got a bit of history now with cars because he left his car at the MCG. It's still there.
Is it still there?
He's picking up day one of pre-season, he reckons. He's still in America, but he parked on Queens Road here in Melbourne, which is bloody busy, and ran out of fuel, put his hazard lights on, and left his car there overnight.
That's awesome. See
if someone could bring a jerry can back the next day. Just
so you just copped it.
Yeah, just left it there.
What about you, Scott? I mean, what despair is there in your helmet when you have no idea if there's enough fuel in the boot to get to the end? I mean, is it a sick feeling where you're driving around thinking, oh, God, I hope the last lap, I hope I don't run out of fuel in the biggest race of our year?
No, honestly, I was surprised, and I couldn't wait to speak about this to Emma and to you guys, but I was so calm. I had no worries. When they said, oh, Jamie's going to go, and he's going to try and, you know, push because he can't make the thing, but we believe you can make it. You just got to keep hitting this number. I was calm. I was hitting it easily, so I wasn't stressed about that. The only time where I got really nervous was the last lap.
SVG, behind you. What goes through your mind thinking one lap to go? Because there was in the back of the pits, we thought the race was over because I didn't know whether they were going to get Heimgartner's car who came off at Forest Elbow.
He went in really hard as well.
Jeez, he went in. And there was coolant all over the road and we were like, well, but they dragged him around to that sort of blind spot there so that he couldn't be hit. Were you thinking that you had to do another lap or were you thinking, oh, maybe we're going to finish under safety car here? And when you did find out you had that last lap, what was going through your head?
Well, he was in pretty hard, Heimgartner, and I was like, geez, we could be on here. And it kind of would be bad if they finished under safety car, but I kind of would be happy about it.
Did you ever think for a moment that they might have stopped you guys on the main straight just to red flag it and say, we have to finish this thing under green?
No, I don't reckon. Oh, I never thought that, but maybe they could have. But they'd been getting their cars out of the way real quick, and I imagined that they were going to get pretty quick, so I just stayed. You know, I just wanted one lap, though. I didn't want two more laps. I was just happy just one lap. I remember them saying, you know, there's probably going to be one lap to go, rah, rah. And I mean, I was, but because I had set my mind up ready for that before, before it started, I was sort of ready for it regardless. So my mind was just focused, ready to go, see what happened. And, you know, that was one of the biggest laps of my life. Like, because we're trying to save the fuel to go fast at the end, my brakes are called out because I hadn't warmed them up, my tyres are called out, and that would have been the same for Shane. And I knew that I got through one and two. I knew that was my first two objectives I had to get through. I had to get through one, I had to get through two, and if he didn't pass me there, I didn't have to defend, it would be good because then I could have a go across the top. So when I got to the cutting, I looked in my mirror before I went to the cutting, I'm like, yeah, he can't dive me there. So I just wheeled it. The hardest lap, I reckon it's harder than the shootout across, because you think about it, we're on 30 lap old tyres, and I've just driven the thing so hard like Shane has, crossed the top, didn't look once at the crowd obviously or what was going on, and then I got out of Forest Elbow, and it was the first time I looked in my mirror since looking out of turn two, and there was like a 5 or 6 car lengths gap, and I'm like, oh my god, like we could actually do this. So I'm going down Conrod, I'm shaking the toe. I'm trying to snake my way, so it was hard for Shane to follow me in the draft. And all I knew that I just had to half make a deep run into the chase, get through the chase, and be safe in the last corner. And yeah, like I said, the relief of that going across the line was just unbelievable. But I feel like I was I just felt calm. Like I was nervous, but I was calm. I knew that this. I set out the steps in my head before I took off for that last final restart, and it worked every way I wanted it to.
Well, I can tell you, mate, it was anything but calm in the back of the garage. Your old man, oh my
god! Oh my god, he's
crazy,
right?
He was, I don't know how much of that last lap he watched, because he was as nervous as I've ever seen someone. But he wouldn't stand still as well. He'd just keep walking around, talking to the next person, but geez, he'd be proud when he went over the line.
I think he drives Carly, poor Carly, insane.
Oh, yeah. I think Carly had to leave the motorhome at one stage.
She came over to the chase with us.
yeah. She did. Yeah, she told me that. She needed a beer and just someone else to talk to, because Dad does get a bit negative. I know. Oh, well, that's what I've heard. I don't know. He just like, he either says, oh, we're screwed, rah, rah, and things are going on. And Carly gets all stressed from it as well. So it's, but I'll tell you what, he's passionate. He knew how much I wanted it.
Did you expect Shane to have more of a go? Or is it just because you nailed him so beautifully out of the chase, got the lead leading on to that final lap, that there was no point that he actually could get close enough to you?
Yeah, I think I was just focused on the start. I knew he was going to have a go if he could. I mean, if I was in that position, I would absolutely have a go. But he's aggressive and he's a tough racer, but he's probably the smartest racer. And in some ways, that made me feel okay about the whole situation as well, because you kind of know he's not going to do anything stupid. Like, he'll race you hard, but he's not going to bomb you and take you out or take himself out. So I sort of knew if I did a good job, got a gap, you know, I was pretty safe.
And then the elation, you win the thing. Cross the line, what's the emotion? I mean, when does the emotion actually come? It looked like you went straight for the eyes straight away, that you felt the tears coming as you went back to the pits, because it's such a short lap when you actually finish Bathurst.
Yeah, I was trying to straighten up coming into the garage part where you pull up, because I was taking deep breaths because I was having a bit of a blubber. I couldn't actually speak to the guys on the radio and stuff, and even now it's pretty emotional. Like, it's just instantly my eyes welled up. It was just like, oh my god, I would like literally won the biggest race of my life. And yeah, I remember just the elation on the radio and all that sort of stuff. You know, it was just from the guys. And then seeing them hanging all over the fence. I think my sister was on the fence at one stage too, so I'm surprised she didn't break her ankle up there. So it's, I just straightened up. Once I was taking a lot of deep breaths to get to the garage, and then once I got there, it was just an outpouring. I actually bent the steering wheel, slamming the steering wheel after I pulled up.
Just so you can keep it now?
No, I didn't realize. It's a museum piece, so it'll go back to how it is. So I think that's what's happening. I think we'll be retiring that car at the end of the year.
What about your week on the mountain, Jack? Did it live up to the expectations you had?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. It seriously was...
Were you actually surprised how much you enjoyed it?
I'll tell you what I was surprised about. The camping setups, amazing. We went in a camper van, so... I organised the trip, so I got to sleep in the
double bed. Scott, did you hear how Jack got through the Blue Mountains when he was driving?
Yeah, I actually heard this. Apparently, Jack left the handbrake on going up the Blue Mountains.
Well, that's
that's a true story, isn't it?
No, well, it wasn't. I thought that was the case, but then Dad drove home. I was still sleeping at that point, and the van was faulty. There you go.
Faulty after you drove the whole Blue Mountains with the handbrake on it.
Well, I won't lie. We went to go up one hill and conked out, so then we went to pull over the side of the road and restart it.
Oh, my God.
We nearly never made it.
I wish someone took a photo of
that. That is awesome.
That was good. But if I went again, well, when I go again, I'll be getting the good camping setup. So I saw this one barbecue. It had a smoker on it, and it was a trailer. It's nearly the greatest piece of material I ever saw. I'll tell you what else I loved. The lack of overbearingness by the cops and security guards. Once you're, like, to get in was a little bit of a bitch. Like, we had, because our camper van was too high, we couldn't go through the tunnel. So we had to wait until that night. So I actually got to drive a four berth caravan down Pitt Strait and win Bathurst. Hodgie caught a little bit of a video. It's because we had to go into the paddock where we were camping.
It was hanging out the window at the time, Scott. You would have loved it.
But when you're in there, they just leave you alone. You can do whatever you want. How good's that?
So what bits were different? What bits were better, or what bits were more feral than you might have
thought?
More
Collingwood than you thought.
up on top of the mountain, that was bloody good fun.
Did you get recognised?
A little bit. Had a few photos. Did not get. Sometimes you go out and you cop a smart ass comment here and there. I did not cop one smart-ass comment. So I think that's what really made my experience really good. Hodgie, we actually...
No one knew who you were in New South Wales.
That might be it. But,
Scotty, can I just tell you, at the top of the mountain, there was a Richmond fan, and he was drinking the Richmond Premiership Carlton draft cans. I know Jack sent you through 55 photos of him with his Richmond Premiership beer. And he was sipping away on his Richmond Premiership beer on the top of Mount Panorama, having the greatest time of his life. And Jack Riewoldt, who kicked five goals in the grand final, walks past him. This guy's life, his year, his life, his everything was made. It was just, he was like, Jack, and he ran back to the Esky, grabbed back a premiership for him, and then Jack's drinking a Richmond Premiership can of beer with him on top of the mountain. It was just this bloke, honestly, he'll have the best story to tell for the next 12 months.
It was awesome. We got home from Friday night. Hodgie was our designated driver, so he was staying in town. We went to the Ox two nights in a row. The first night, I made the clanger of having the salmon, which was not great.
Why would you have a salmon in Bathurst? Fair way away from the water.
Backed up and had the ribs the next two nights. But we got home at like 9:30, and Hodgie goes, look, maybe like 2 o'clock or something like that, things start to get a bit hairy around here. People start running around and setting off stuff. 9:30, the fireworks started up Mount Straight. People were letting fireworks go left, right, and centre. And I was just loving that. I thought that was unbelievable.
Well, let's get to Jack's top five. And again, he has brought a sponsor to the party.
Hey, Dad, in the olden days, did your car have a fridge and canopy?
No, son.
What was it like?
Well, the Esky would leak on hot days, the tray would fill on rainy days, and the suspension was so rough, things would go flying out the back.
But now we can get a canopy from the new car shop?
You betcha, kiddo. We can get all our ARB accessories straight from the dealer. Just gotta ask.
Order your ARB accessories with your new car today. Talk to the team at ARB Bairnsdale and Traralgon or the new Sale four-wheel drive centre. Just gotta ask.
Well, that's right, Hodgie. I've brought another sponsor. And I was actually in conversation with possibly getting Speed Cafe on board. And our mate Crush, he's interested. There's another sponsor that has slipped my mind. But
William Orr from Authentic Collectibles.
Well, so...
Wow.
He's on board. He's just,
shout out to Willie.
He's
just got to put out his the Bathurst range. So we were going to do it tonight.
Yep.
His range isn't out yet.
Okay, but that will be coming. So that's another sponsor I've got. This one here. Whether you're a tradie, grey nomad, or just a weekend warrior who loves to explore the great outdoors, ARB has the gear to get you there for all your 4x4 needs from the Latrobe Valley to the border. Drop in and see Daniel, Emily, and the teams at ARB Traralgon, Sale 4 Drive Centre, and ARB Bairnsdale. I'll tell you what, I'll be going to see them before I go up to Bathurst because I no doubt they are going to have some gear for me for this setup because I went underprepared. All right, here we go.
This is the top five. You try and shaft them while you're there, but anyway.
I'll cop freebies.
Yeah.
Free, it's for me. That's a great motto to have, Scott.
Yeah.
The top five things, Tim and Scott, that make Bathurst, Bathurst. Number five, got up to the top of the mountain. I was a bit disappointed we couldn't walk up there, but that's another point.
Are you serious? You wanted to walk up there? Have you seen how hot hilly that
place? Yeah, it would have been all right. So we went up in the bus. I got up there, and all of a sudden I see these people walking around with, like, those removals trolleys, like the little things you pick up a fridge or a box or something with. Then I see this bloke strapping his Esky onto his removals trolley, walking it into where the Reed Park is, and he plonked it down there, and I thought that was one of the greatest setups of all time. So I'll be taking one of them next year, the trolley.
Nice.
Number four, we decided not to use the shower and the toilet in the camper van because we didn't think it'd be a pain in the ass emptying it, but also...
And you're 6'4".
Yeah, it'd be horrific. It'd be a horrific stench in there as well with three blokes in there. So we used the amenities that were on site there, which I'll tell you what was
were your thongs?
Not bad. Thongs are a must, an absolute must for anyone that goes up there. And at 7:30 in the morning, Charlie went for a shower and blokes were drinking VBs on the Sunday, lining up to go to the toilet and have a shower. That is Bathurst right there.
Yeah, Victor Braze, that's awesome.
Number three, the Bathurst Hilton, you mentioned it beforehand. The people who haven't been to Bathurst, is this huge marquee in the middle of the paddock camping ground. So that's right in the middle of the track. And it's a hotel, is that right? People are actually, they sell
there's
the rooms.
There's suites in there.
There's suites.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's suites in there. Yeah, most of the people in there are Ford fans, I think. I'm not quite sure, but it's impressive, isn't it?
They actually had Elvis. An Elvis impersonator, Hodgie, singing out the front. Now, you think if he was an Elvis impersonator singing, he'd be singing an Elvis song. He was singing a Neil Diamond song. An Elvis impersonator. There you go. So if you want to live in a little bit of luxury, get to the Bathurst Hilton.
So you went and saw them with a box of beers?
No, you tried to get me to go in there because you're like, oh, they'll know who you are because they love me. That's quote what Scott McLaughlin said.
No, it's not.
Scott, now, please don't be dishonest. Did you say that?
No, I didn't.
You did say that. This is a lie. I don't know if you've seen this driving around, but the people that park, this is number two, people that are on the mountain straight, there's a camping, obviously the paddock runs into that, there's camping there. People have got grandstands on top of their cars. So they've
really?
Got a ute, and they've got like literally like a grandstand set up, and they sit there all day, drink their own beers, and watch them scream up mountain straight. That's
good view, and they got TVs up there and the whole deal.
That makes Bathurst, Bathurst. But the one thing that over anything else that makes Bathurst, Bathurst, And I was chatting to your pit crew about this after everything had died down. The efficiency to get all the booms, all the really high-tech stuff out of pit lane once the race is won and won, because the locals and the fans, they fair dinkum ransack the joint once once it's done.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's crazy. I saw there was a guy there that had actually manufactured a pole. He's been there before, clearly. He'd manufactured a pole, and he was running, and he was pulling the signs down of, like, the drivers, putting them under the wing and doing the Harold Holt.
That's why everyone... It's crazy. Everyone has to pull their booms and all that pit equipment, because literally anything that is not tied to the ground, like, it's gone. Like, they will come and just, like, take it. It's crazy.
They ransacked the joint, Hodgie. A fair dinkum. Yep. And I saw this one poor security guard chasing after these three blokes with the signs. Just going, mate, it is a bit of cardboard. Let it go. Let it go. Mm. So... there's plenty of things up there that make Bathurst, Bathurst.
All right, before we go, the juiciest part of the whole weekend.
Oh, can I tell a couple more stories?
Sunday night at the Oxford.
Oh, yeah,
this is where we're going.
Yeah.
The highlight for me was being pestered by people saying, oh, do you think Jackal's in the Killers? I don't know, go and ask him. And then you were finally, at about 1 a.m, you both gave the all clear, and then you got up on stage and sang Mr. Brightside.
I can't remember doing it. There you go.
I'm not surprised by that. We did put it up on our socials. What were your highlights from Sunday night? Was it everything you thought it might be if you were lucky enough to win Bathurst, Scott?
Was I lucky enough to win Bathurst? What's that?
No. The highlights.
The party afterwards.
Was the party after? Did it live up to the expectations?
Oh, well and truly. I think we half made the party. We were on the DJ decks at the end of the night, weren't we? Jack.
Hodgie, if they hadn't... You jumped off early. You left early, don't lie. Didn't you?
Didn't he?
No, I went at 2.
Yeah, okay.
He's a smoke bomber, if I've ever seen one.
If they had not shut that joint down, I'd still be there. Fair dinkum. They had to drag me out.
No, Scott and I spoke about this. You might have got lost after they kicked you out of the nightclub. And you're
no
lost.
One kicked us out. No, well, whenever, they, finished, oh, they told us no, to leave
whenever
when
Jack
we finished.
And his brother
yeah.
Charlie left, and they'd had a taxi all weekend, which was me driving them around the place, but they had to find their own way home. So I got the most abusive voicemail message. Do you remember leaving
that
message? And so Scott and I think, should we play it? And it's like, it's too abusive to actually play. So, how did you get home? Because you were walking aimlessly around Bathurst. He was at... So the Oxford Hotel is in the middle of Bathurst, Scott, and he had no idea where Mount Panorama was, so it was going to be a long walk.
No, we typed Mount Panorama into the Google Maps, and we started walking, and we walked 30 minutes in the wrong direction. And then
how
we
do
had
you
to
do
cut.
That with Google Maps? It's the most reliable source of
how
mapping.
You reckon? We got no idea where we're going. So
you're cross-eyed.
How can you lose Mount Panorama? It's the biggest thing in Bathurst.
Yeah, there's a sign up the top, mate.
So
there's
we walked
30
minutes
light.
In the wrong direction, and then we walked another hour to get back in the right direction, and then Charlie ended up having to jump in front of a cab, basically, to get this lady to take us. It was a $5 cab from where we were.
If you'd have put
the heat track on us or the map or whatever, we would have been just walking around in circles.
How's us... like singing like the Killers. Oh, that was cool, right? We had that joint cranking.
At one point, I actually approached Roland Dane to sponsor the Richmond Football Club, try to get him on board. I'm still waiting for his call back on that one.
I accidentally dropped Tim Slade on his ass. I came up behind
Sunday
him. Didn't he? He was out lap one. And I've come up behind him, and like this is what I do. I just say, "Hey, mate," and grabbed him and like lift him up with one arm in between his legs, obviously from a behind position. Like he had no idea what was going on, but I didn't realize he had two drinks. And then I've lost control of him, and he's dead set landed flat on his face on the ground, smashed both his drinks. Oh man! And I got him up. And just walked off. Like, I completely forgot I did.
Dropped
it.
Him and just left. What,
no, I didn't drop him and left. I said, mate, you good? Oh, my God. But I should have gone and bought him new drinks. I completely...
Did you whack him in the groin like everyone else you whacked in the whole nightclub?
No, I was just saying. That's my way of affection to most of my friends.
Great. I'll tell you... this is another story, Hodgie, that I should tell. When we decided to leave the chase, this is where 20 laps to go, me and a guy called Stormy, who I'd met that day...
Stormy.
We started running from the chase. We had no beers, and we're like, oh, let's get a drink. And we're like, oh, well, you can't take the drinks out of the area. So I'd spotted these Richmond flags in this tent near the chase, and I thought, well, go past there and pinch a couple of beers off them and say, can we have a couple of beers? Went in there, Richmond flags, no one was in there, TV was blaring, I could see the Esky, and I thought, they had the Richmond Premiership cans as well.
Oh my God, you didn't.
No, I didn't take it. I left it there, and then we were like, bugger, okay, so I can't do it. So then we're walking down, we walked up maybe Scaife, which is one of the streets there, and I saw this Richmond footy sitting on the side of the street, and I was like, oh, that's our chance there. Ran up, grabbed this Richmond footy, and this little kid sort of recognised who I was. He was sitting with his parents in the camp zone, and I sort of said, shimmied for him to lead at me and sort of said, lead at me, mate. Went to kick the ball and kicked it straight into their fire pit.
Oh, no way.
Stormy ran over there and grabbed this ball out of the fire pit.
You've just ruined this kid's day because his hero can't even kick a ball straight.
I would have been 10 metres away and I've kicked this little mini footy straight into the fire pit.
Prelim final form.
But
exactly.
We managed to get a couple of beers off them, which was great. But yeah, it was a loose night, Hodgie. So loose that the unofficial brother of the podcast got on the plane back to Melbourne and had his shirt inside out, got to the Virgin Lounge, and he's like, oh, I really would like an apple. Who wants an apple after they've had 1,000 beers night before? Then sees one of those little dinner bread rolls. So literally, not very big, tiny one of them. Didn't finish it until we landed in Melbourne. And we flew and we had to wait half an hour in Sydney. And then an hour and a half flight. 2 hours it took him to eat this one little bread roll.
Hey, no way. Scott, did he stash it? Just hold it?
Mate, he was literally picking at it, like eating one crumb at a time. He was that.
He's like a bird.
He was disheveled.
it was a budgie.
It was a wild night. Scott, when was your last, and you might, this is probably stupid me trying to get any sense out of this. Do you have any idea when your last drink was, if you had any sleep at all, and then when your first radio interview was Monday morning?
I got home at, reckon, 4:45, and I cracked a tinny in the motorhome and sat there with Carly and just soaked it all in. So I reckon I finished that at, like, 5 and then just passed out on the couch. I didn't even make it back to bed. I reckon 5:30, I reckon I finished up. Yeah. And then my media guy rang us up at 6:15.
And how many radio interviews did you have to do Monday morning? And how shabby were you give us a rating out of 10.
Out of 10, I was a 1. Out of blindness, I was a 9 out of 10. I have dead set. Like, I walked on that Today Show with that bloke. I hardly remember it.
No.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was. But no, he,
poor guy,
we rocked in late for one.
Locked in live cross, and he was...
It was a 6:30 live cross.
And he said, well, I'm supposed to be interviewing Scott McLaughlin. He hasn't turned up.
Oh, no.
And then in the background, Scott pulls up and he runs into shot, still shabby as...
Yeah. Yeah. And look, 15 minutes before that, I was still in the clothes from the night on the couch. And, like, I remember answering the phone and Ben's like, it's time to get up, mate. And I'm just like, no. Like,
black
no
pants,
way.
Black pants.
Yeah, straight in, tucked in shirt.
I'm surprised you didn't have that on actually out, to be honest.
No, I was pretty legit. My outfit was on point on Sunday night, but I was bland. It was good.
Any other stories?
But why wouldn't I wouldn't be any other way?
No,
I literally won my first Bathurst 1000. Stuff it, I'm going big, and I did, and I'm proud of it. And I'll go big on Saturday. And I'll race at Gold Coast, and I'll go big on Sunday there too, because I won Bathurst. You know, I'm stoked.
I've got a wedding that week. I was going to do a rant, but we've had such a good show. I don't think we need a rant, do we?
We don't need a rant today.
If you just, you would know what the rant's about, if you know.
Hey, there's something special coming next month, guys. I think you've both committed to this. We have a special live recording of Balls and Bumpers.
Yes.
Yes,
it's
we do.
It's a monster Friday night ahead of the Sandown 500. It's at the Flinders Hotel, Warragul Road, Chadstone. It's Friday, November 8th. So that's Melbourne Cup Week down here.
Yep.
And that is, Sandown 500 is actually Cup Week. It's on Stakes Weekend. Tickets are at matthewflindershotel.com.au. Jack, what can we expect from one of these nights?
Well, we're going to take the show on the road.
And it's going to be interviews.
It's going to be interviews. So we'll obviously run the show as we normally do, but we'll get some crowd interaction, a few questions off the crowd, which you don't get. We should be using our socials a bit more to get questions, but
a few questions today, actually.
Should we
get to some of those?
No, we're gonna.
We've got to go, mate.
You live in Brisbane, mate. Melbourne traffic.
Well, just so you know, fans out there of Balls and Bumpers, I said yes to questions, and Jack said no.
Corey's question was: that's are you going to get a Bathurst tattoo?
Oh yeah, I like that one.
He actually asked both of you: are you going to get a premiership tattoo?
No, I'm not.
And will you get a Bathurst tattoo?
No, I think I'll get a Bathurst tattoo somewhere. Don't know where. Maybe my ass.
Congrats, Scotty. We couldn't be more thrilled for you.
Thanks, boys. It was epic. That was cool. Just going through that. That was really cool. That was really cool. Thank you. Thanks for that. It was very cool.
All the best for next weekend on the streets of Surface Paradise. It is one of the, I reckon it's supercars at their best up there. We are rubbing up against concrete walls is the only way around the joint. It's awesome. So fun week ahead for you.
Yeah, can't wait. Thanks, boys. Appreciate it. Thanks, Jackie, for coming.
Just remember you guys, as those blokes are chanting at the stadium at the finish of the race, we want Dick.
Yeah, we want Dick, exactly.
And Scott, next show we might play Jack's message as he walked home from the Oxford Hotel at about 4:00.
It's the intro for sure. 100%. It's the intro.
Good on you, Mackers. Congratulations. See you, everyone.
Are you ready? Supercross is coming to Melbourne. Don't miss the Monster Energy OzX Open inside Marvel Stadium on November 30. See two-time world champion Chad Reed take on 2018 world champion Jason Anderson from the USA, Australia's best, and the greatest of all time, Ricky Carmichael. More racing, more action, more entertainment for all ages. Don't miss out. Book at Ticketmaster now.